order. I would like to announce the order of events today. Going to be moving it around a little bit. We're going to be taking action on House Bill 3500 first, simply to move it to another committee. Then we'll be moving into House Bill 3502, 3503, House Bill 2892, and House Bill 2574 in that order. We've got 2 hours to work today, and I want to try to get as much done as we possibly can. So, we will move into a work session on House Bill 3500.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Harper.
I move House Bill 3500 to the floor without recommendation and then be referred to the Committee on Water and Environment.
Thank you. Representative Harper has moved House Bill 3500 to the floor without recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Water and Environment. Any discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson?
Aye.
Beck? Bowman?
Yes.
Decker? Parker?
Aye.
Jar?
Aye.
Clinsari? Thompson?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Aye. Motion carries. I'll let the record show that Representative Sunseri is excused for today. All right, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3500, and we will move into a public hearing on House Bill 3502. Go ahead and come forward here, if you would, please.
Asking questions.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the National Federation of Independent Business, over 14,000 small Oregon businesses in this state. We're here today in favor of House Bill 3502 and 3503. They both are connected, and in fact, in the drafting of these, they probably should have been made one bill, but we have, unfortunately, two bills to deal with. The bills themselves deal directly with the dividend distribution policy of Safe Corporation. And the reason we're here today in favor of these bills, and we've requested these bills, is that NFIB, in an effort to service our members and provide services that benefit our membership, would like to come into the state and provide a workers' compensation group program with our partner, our insurance partner that we're using in other states. I'm going to make a few comments on the bill and the reason we're here, and then I'm going to introduce you to our national insurance manager for NFIB membership programs. I'll give you some background on what we do in other states and how we serve our members and a little bit on why we are not in Oregon in such a solid state with such solid laws on workers' compensation. The first thing you see really to I know we're limited on time, so I'm going to cut you right to the chase. The first thing I handed out to you, the first page, is really an example of why we have a problem coming in and being competitive in this market. Even though we have a three-way market, which simply means self-insurance, Safe Corporation as a state-run insurance company, and then the private market. If you look at the comparison on the first page, the top half of that we really don't have a problem with the way Safe goes about advertising their product. It compares premiums, it compares discounts, and gives a subtotal line, which is the line that says $17,600 compared to Liberty Northwest's $19,500. It's the bottom half that gives us heartburn. And that's where they put their dividend history in the mix of pricing. It becomes a pricing gimmick because although the statute prohibits them from promising a dividend or declaring a dividend, they go ahead and use it as a way to convince the business owner that they could provide $20,000 of insurance for $2,000, where the closest private competitor could only provide it for $14,000. And we believe that's misleading and unfair. Safe has a definite advantage in the market. Because of the way they're structured, they have a tax-free status. They don't pay federal income taxes on their reserves, and that provides them a huge amount of investment income every year to provide dividends or services or other things. It's a advantage that no other carrier has. And they're to use that as their mission states, to use that advantage to provide insurance to make it available and as affordable as possible to Oregon employers. It's a very broad statement. The problem we run into is the current leadership at Safe has a different attitude towards that. If you look on the last page, it should have put the second. It's a clip of the Statesman Journal from the CEO and president of Safe Corporation, which clearly states her interpretation of Safe's mission in the marketplace. We are extremely bothered by the last sentence in her comments. As you see, it's circled there in the middle of the copy. We are here to make it hard for other insurers to make a profit. And when you're trying to foster a three-way system, there's a very important component to the three-way system. You have to have the third leg to be three-way, and that's the private market. And your goal is to provide available and affordable insurance, not to target the profit margins or the ability to make a profit of those in the third, in the private market. To understand why this is a problem, if you're choosing to go with a private carrier and provide a competitive program, you look at the second page of what I handed you, and you need to understand where the dividends come from. As I've talked to legislators, there's kind of a misunderstanding that the dividends are based on the performance of the individual policyholders and how safe they are or how unsafe they are. How safe dividends are driven, if you look at this graph, you see the two lines that follow themselves very similarly. That is investment income and dividends. If you look at the third line that goes way up and then goes down to the bottom of the page, that is actually the underwriting gain on premiums. That's premiums less the expenses and losses. Dividends are tied to their ability to invest, and their invests are tax-free. Their investments are based on the fund that they have been managing since 1913. So it's not just the policyholder's money that goes in this year. They manage it and return a certain amount. If you're a policyholder at Safe, you have the benefit of 80 years of investment coming back tax-free and being put into the market. Our problem with the way they're doing that is they're using that to target out people, to compare it, and promise that they can continue to provide this huge dividend. Now, no one foresaw in legislation in 1980 when they made Safe a public corporation where the stock market would go. No one foresaw since 1990 that we'd be at, I think yesterday it closed at 10,500 plus. And so this has caused a real problem in the marketplace for competition. And our bill gets directly at that. I've also provided you, after looking at the bill and talking with the Department of Business Consumer Affairs, I'm providing you with some conceptual amendments because our first draft of this doesn't appear to really work very well. And after talking with them and the technical people, Dick McGavick at the department, it seems that some of the things we did conflict with how they need to operate and that what's reasonable and fair. So we have presented you with some conceptual amendments. The amendments and the meat of it is for House Bill 3503, at the bottom of the page I handed you that says NFIB conceptual amendments. It would state that the State Accident Insurance Fund Corporation and its agents or representatives are prohibited from using information from past dividend declarations to advertise, market, promote, or suggest the effect of a dividend declaration on a future premium. What that means is that on that first piece of paper I gave you, they could only do the comparison at the top half of that paper. They couldn't do that bottom half comparison on the dividend. The Department of Business, Insurance, and Consumer Affairs shall provide an independent audit that verifies the accuracy of the distribution and compliance with the provisions of this section, and the department shall be reimbursed reasonable costs related to the independent audit by Safe Corporation. 3502 simply says that they have to report what their dividend practice is in their annual report they already file with the department. They would have to include that with the report. On my right, I would like to introduce and then take questions after Jeff Cook talks. Jeff is our manager of our national insurance programs and membership services programs to our members for NFIB. Jeff comes out of a very interesting place. He comes into insurance. He's actually an industrial engineer, and his basis comes out of looking at workplaces and changing things to make sure they're safe and that they work properly and to reduce risk. He then became involved in the insurance industry, has worked for two international firms, and we were lucky enough to bring Jeff on to NFIB as we started these programs. And I'd like to bring him as a background of what we're doing in other states and how we operate.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jeff. Thank you. I'll try to confine my remarks and be as brief as possible, but I do appreciate you allowing me to be here today. One of the things I'd like to do is discuss our philosophy in creating work comp programs for our members, and
if I could have you identify yourself for the record.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. My name is Jeff Cook. I'm with the National Federation of Independent Business.
Thank you.
And thank you. But also like to discuss the current programs that we have in existence in other states, and I'll talk briefly about our decision to delay our entry with our programs into the Oregon market. Traditionally, NFIB has not offered value-added products or services to its memberships. However, in 1992, we began to offer workers' compensation programs and currently have programs in 34 states. And our preference is to provide those programs through a private commercial carrier. However, we do have programs in states with state funds and monopolistic programs. But in order to be consistent with our goal of limiting our competition with our members, we also try to offer our products through as many insurance agents as possible. And NFIB, keeping consistent with its goal as becoming the premier advocate for small business, places absolutely no size restriction on the members that may join any of our programs. So our long-term goal in putting these programs together is to offer a stable market of competitively priced insurance products, which would then yield performance-related dividends to our members. And we use a large portion of the monies that we earn from these programs to develop loss prevention videotapes, newsletters, risk management guides, and other services that help our members reduce their overall cost of risk. In Washington State and in Ohio, we have programs with the monopolistic state funds because they allow us to set up either heterogeneous pools or broad-based homogeneous pools. In Washington State, we have a program that has over 300 members, and in Ohio, we have over 8,400 companies, making us the largest such pool in that state. And turning in Arizona and Montana, we do have programs with the competitive state funds. We have 1,600 members in Montana and 3,000 in Arizona, and we find that the dividends and services offered by those state funds make it very difficult for us to replace that program with a private carrier. However, in 30 states, we have formed a partnership with the Hartford, and about 80% of our members are eligible to purchase coverage through that program. And interestingly, the average premium in those states is around $2,500, which mirrors fairly closely the latest statistics that I've seen for the average size of companies that are in the Oregon State Fund. So our limited experience since we started these programs in 1996 with the Hartford shows that in general, smaller employers have had fewer accidents, which is consistent with NFIB Education Foundation's review of the accident experience of companies based on size and industry from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And so to be successful, what we're trying to do is reduce the administrative costs of our programs and expand the number of small businesses, very small businesses, under $5,000 in premium that we can bring into our programs so we can greater absorb their risks. And that program's growth, however, has been limited by the extremely competitive nature of the marketplace for workers' compensation in many states. And in addition, we find that our small business owners now have, and their agents now have, greater access to a wider number of companies willing to sell their prices, willing to sell them workers' compensation at lower prices than before. And we feel, I feel, that this competition is a result of the nature of the market, but also companies are beginning to target small businesses because of their ability to reduce the acquisition costs and the highly competitive nature of the middle market and larger accounts. And also, as I stated before, the claim performance of small business as a whole. Based on that information, we made a decision to begin to stop the rollout of our programs into new states to evaluate the performance of our program and to begin to find ways where we could differentiate that private industry program by allowing it to pay dividends similar to what we experience with competitive state funds. However, our decision to remain on the sidelines in Oregon is based chiefly on our opinion that we would not be able to compete effectively with SAFE in that marketplace. So while we continue to evaluate our options in Oregon and would like to bring a program that would allow our members another option to have access to a competitively priced product that rewards the development of safe work environments and avoids wild swings in the price and availability of coverage, we feel it's not appropriate to enter at this time. So I would urge your support of House Bills 3202 and 3203, and would like to thank you for your time and attention this morning. And if you have any questions, we'd be happy to field those now.
Thank you. Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me how many companies in the state of Oregon currently provide workers' compensation insurance?
I'm not sure what the exact number is right now.
Hold on just a second.
Any further questions while we wait for that one to be answered? Yeah, I might ask, referring directly to first page of this bill, lines 16, 17, and 18. I wanted to ask, that amendment itself, what will that look like in actual form? How do you see that taking shape? Dividend distribution shall be accompanied by an independent audit report that verifies the accuracy of the distribution and compliance with the provisions of this section. So what would that actually look like if executed?
If executed, what it would verify is that the distribution formula that is presented by SAFE to the department does not unfairly discriminate. Now, we're in the conceptual amendments, we need to leave the word unfairly in there because it makes too tight a noose on trying to determine who gets dividends and who doesn't. It wouldn't work under the insurance codes. But, Mr. Chair, you would have to allow them to fairly discriminate, but there would be an independent audit that would look at that policy, look at their distributions, and determine if, in fact, they're meeting that that standard, that they aren't biasing their dividends to attract or accommodate a certain market at the expense of another one, or to attract larger businesses at the expense of smaller businesses that aren't as attractive as an account to them.
So is the upshot of this the fact that everyone would be a receptor of dividends at a level rate, or what exactly?
Mr. Chair, it would not affect a great deal of what they're doing today as far as who they're deciding to give them to, as long as this independent audit said it wasn't unfairly discriminatory. They have many different policies, whether they're retro policies or standard policies, and there's standard group policies, and it goes on. And each of those groups have a different distribution formula. I've looked at some of those formulas, and I have a question of whether some of them are appropriate, because the smaller businesses with the same loss ratio, so the same experience as a larger business, receives a less percentage, even though on the front end of your pricing, you give a better price to those larger accounts because they have less administrative costs associated with them, so they get a better price in the small account, so you even it up, but then they also give them a better dividend on the back end too, so they get a better deal both ways. Now, we feel that should be looked at to make sure that once you get a good deal on the front end, everybody's treated the same on the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't be discriminated if you're based on your size. And that could be, you know, brought forth to the department as a concern, and then the independent auditor would decide whether it was appropriate in the insurance market or not.
So back to the idea of discrimination here. It, as long as the discrimination was consistent, would that be reasonable to you? As long as there's rhyme or reason to it?
Mr. Chair, yes, it would. You may have a situation where you have two businesses who pay the exact same premium, $10,000 a year, let's say, but one has no losses and pays attention to safety and does all the things you need to do, and one company has a terrible loss ratio with a lot of frequency and continues to not pay mind to the safety programs and things. I think there's a good argument to be made that you might want to treat those businesses differently on the dividend, and what are you rewarding as going on, even though the dividend's tied to the investment and not the performance of those businesses. As a public policy, do you want to be giving the same dividend to somebody who's not as safe or who's refusing to be as safe as someone else?
All right. Thank you. Could we readdress Representative Bowman's question about number of companies offering workman's comp insurance in the state?
I'm not sure of the exact number of companies. I know it's a $603 million market, at least in 1997, according to the figures that we have in the latest. And the latest number of companies that I saw in the assigned risk pool was about 7,000 or so. But in terms of the overall count for the market, I'm just not. I don't know that number. But I live in Tennessee and couldn't tell you the exact number of companies in Tennessee that purchase coverage either.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowen, I'm sorry. What I have here is actually it's by premium and not by individual companies. I don't want to venture a guess. I don't want to be inaccurate. I'll provide this for you if you want to look at the market share of active companies.
Mr. Chair, it would be helpful if we could get that information. I mean, because what you're saying to us is that it is not cost-effective for you to compete in this market. And if there are other insurance companies who are, in fact, competing in this market successfully, then that kind of negates the argument about why we need to make these changes.
Well, I think if you look at the concentration at the top of the marketplace, that it would indicate to me that the top two carriers control approximately 50% or more of the marketplace. And once you drop from the top two markets, the next leading carrier has only 5% market share. And a large number of companies that control considerably more than that share of market in other states are having difficulty penetrating the top two carriers. So I would say, just looking at that on the surface would indicate to me that it's a pretty tightly constricted market.
Could I ask what accounts for the success of the number two firm in this market?
I think that Liberty Northwest is a standalone unit of Liberty. They're well capitalized, very aggressive, and they also, I understand, have some programs that allow them to pay dividends in their programs.
Thank
but they do have lost market share in the current marketplace.
Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I just handed you the last page. This was provided in testimony on House Joint Resolution 57. I believe by the AIG insurance carrier who had the same concerns that we had as far as competition. They provided this. The last page gives you a breakdown of market share by premium that you may want to look at. It gives you an idea of how that slopes off, Representative Bowman's question.
Thank you. Joe, before you go, I think you made reference, unless I got it wrong, that the word unfairly would have been in conceptual amendments that you supplied to us on 3502, and we don't see that word in there.
No.
So you might check that.
Mr. Chair, it's on the conceptual amendment for House Bill 3503.
Oh, on 3503?
3503, it's in the existing language, It's in the existing language, so we didn't highlight it. It would just stay in as
right.
It is today.
Very
That's
good.
The policy today.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you very much.
Chair. Thank you very much.
I'd like to call Representative Butler forward, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today and would ask that that in reference to House Bills 3502 and 3503 that you consider first taking a look at the language in 3502 that has been added, and perhaps that would clear up some of the issues that have been raised. Did I tell you who I was? I guess you
would you tell me who you are, sir?
I've
placed the name.
I've
seen him somewhere.
You can get my picture at most any post office. It's on the wall. My name is Tom Butler. I'm from Ontario, House District 60. This week, doubled it. the issue that House Bill 3503 raises, and that probably is the first thing to go into effect here, would be that the Legislative Assembly be alerted as to and have a report that covers both the activities as well as the operations and the dividend distribution policy of the State Accident Industrial Fund. Now, I'm begging your pardon, stampeding to apologize here that I arrived late, not knowing what other testimony has been entered into the record. There's a fairly substantial untaxed balance within the State Accident Industrial Fund, something approximating $2.7 to $3 billion that of untaxed funds, which have never hit the market for any income tax purposes other than paying proportionate shares of monies into a state insurance fund. The issue is, should those policy or those amounts of money that have been collected from the policyholders for these many years be used to keep competition out of the state of Oregon? And that's where we get the language then in House Bill 3502 addresses directly the dividend issue, that the dividend distribution shall be accompanied by an independent audited report that verifies, in fact, the accuracy of the distribution in compliance with the provisions. And so that's the reason that I have asked for, number one, a dividend policy that we can actually lay our hands upon and know that we're not out buying business. Because if you can buy business with untaxed money, stop and think of what the drug cartel looks like. If you can buy business with untaxed money, then basically you can have control of everything. And my position is that what we need to do in Oregon is we need to get control of the policy itself as to how much you can buy, how much the dividend distributions can be, and then establish that policy and then make sure that it is adhered to on a regular basis. And thus, this comprises 3502 and 3503, and the reason why I feel that it is appropriate that we take some action on this particular issue. I'm going to allude just briefly to that which we have seen in the press in the last couple of weeks, of the rather cozy arrangement that the State Accident Industrial Fund has with some other entities that we're familiar with in this state. And I've come under some bit of fire myself for questioning why it would be appropriate for me to ask questions about some of these arrangements, why they should become public. And I would ask you to keep an open mind, because I feel very, very strongly that we need to do all that we can to foster competition and to put available for good use the amounts of money that are set aside here, and I leave that in the hands of the legislature and the executive branch of the state to determine what the good use of that would be at some particular point in time. But as for now, we cannot allow that to become an insurance cartel in the state of Oregon that unfairly keeps other competition out to drive the market rates down.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Any questions?
One question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hello, Representative Butler. Based on the statement that you just made, obviously there have been some questions about SAFE and the practice. I guess my concern is that we haven't answered those questions yet. I mean, there have been some allegations that have been in the media, and I'm sure there have been a couple of committee hearings debating the process. So do you think that it's appropriate for us to move forward on these bills until those questions have been answered?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman. I think your question is an excellent question, Representative Bowman. And I think that it is a very timely, appropriate action to take. In other words, if we establish a policy that in effect is a policy that says, fine, if you want to go ahead and use your rather substantial largest and earnings off of that enormous fund, then if you want to go ahead and use those earnings to reduce premiums across the board so that you can keep other insurance companies from coming into the state of Oregon and offering this coverage, then that perhaps is appropriate. But if that method of paying dividends is used indiscriminately without any oversight on the part of the legislative or the executive branches of government, if that ability to buy policies from various companies, what it does, if it goes unchecked, then it leaves small business at risk of having no one to cover them eventually. What happens is that you create an element of one company buying up all of the good business, and then the at-risk pool unable to really care for itself and forcing other companies who just don't have that ability to accumulate nearly $3 billion of untaxed fund to come in and do business in the state of Oregon. So I think that the answer to your question is this is the appropriate way to do it. It does not tie the hands of State Accident Industrial Fund. It merely says establish in writing what the policy will be, let us know what the policy will be, and then make sure that independently, once each year, that someone can come in and look at your books and see across the board that you have followed what you told the legislature that you would do.
Thank you. Any further? All right, thank you. Will you be back for 3503, or can we take it that we understand your position on that?
I think I've made my position clear, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very kindly.
All right, next up will be Chris Davey from SAFE. And while Mr. Davey is coming forward, I want to go over our schedule once again for any late arrivers here. We're currently on House Bill 3502. We're going to move to 3503. Then we will go to 2892 in a work session and conclude with 2574 today. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Chris Davey with SAFE Corporation. With me is Brian Steffel, Senior Vice President of SAFE Corporation, who is our expert on these matters relating to dividends, and perhaps if there are some technical questions or issues that come up, I might defer to him to respond to those. First of all, let me say that you've already heard a lot in this testimony that doesn't really relate to the subject of these bills, and we also have something like a moving target because the amendments that have been introduced are not available before this hearing today. So the testimony that I'm going to give you, of course, speaks to the original bills, and then I'd like to be able to comment on the testimony that you've already heard so far. Just to give you a brief outline first, because I don't think anyone has explained what a dividend is or where a dividend comes from, I've tried to lay out in simple terms how dividends get paid and how an insurance company handles its financial assets. Workers' compensation claims, as you probably know, have a very long life. Once a claim is accepted, the insurance company has a liability to pay those benefits for as long as that worker is alive, and sometimes after that worker dies, there are survivors who are still entitled to benefits. So we have claims that go back to injuries that occurred even before the Second World War. We have to put aside every year the money that we think we need to pay the ultimate cost of those claims. And that's an actuarial judgment based on past experience, based on present practices, looking at the case law, the statutes, and all of those things. Every insurance company does this the same way. That money is the loss reserve portion of our financial assets. Then in addition to that, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the Insurance Division, every other insurance regulator requires that there be an additional fund that is set up to cover unforeseen losses. And insurance parlance, that's referred to as the surplus. Now, what SAFE does at regular intervals is to take a look at that sum of money and figure out whether it's still the appropriate sum to cover those liabilities that we've incurred that go back very many years. And we look at a lot of factors. We look at the things that, how the law is. When the law changes, it potentially changes people's entitlements to benefits. We look at how the courts interpret those statutes, because that is also an important factor over the years. We look at things like the inflation rate, because we make assumptions about that money going in. We want to revalidate those assumptions and make sure they're appropriate. And we, of course, we look at also at the return that we get on our investments. Our board of directors looks at that number and determines that we may have an amount that exceeds the amount that we need for those loss reserves and surplus, then we declare a dividend, and that dividend is then paid to our policyholders. Now, Mutual insurance companies pay dividends to their policyholders, and investor-owned insurance companies also pay some dividends to their policyholders, although their primary responsibility is to their stockholders. But we all go through basically the same analysis in figuring out how much money do we need, and then there is a mechanism for moving the money that you don't need to some other place. Different companies use different formulas for figuring out how to pay a dividend. Our dividends are allocated to each product line first, based on the profitability of that product line. And then beyond that, we look at the individual employer experience, and we look at the premium that's been paid, the losses that have been incurred, and then we try to match the dividend that we pay to the experience that that individual employer has had, so that it fairly represents the amount that they've contributed to the profit, which is in essence being returned by way of dividend. You've heard previously concerns about small employers. I would add that our dividend formula is weighted heavily in favor of small employers. We recognize that once in a while a small employer may have a claim, maybe only be one claim, but it may easily exceed the annual premium that they pay. We don't penalize them for that. If a small employer pays us less than $1,000 in premium, they will always get a dividend without regard to what their loss experience has been. And if we, before this hearing, I went and looked at how much money we've paid as a percentage of premium to our smallest employers and our largest employers. If an employer pays us less than, or excuse me, for the employers who pay us less than $10,000 per year in premium, the average dividend that they received from our dividend that was paid early last year was 46% of the premium. For the employers who pay us $100,000 a year in premium or more, the average dividend that they received was, I think it was 24%. It was in the 20s, I think around 24% of premium. So our dividend distribution formula is in fact weighted in favor of small employers. Now, the first part of my testimony on House Bill 3502 is now irrelevant because it deals with the elimination of the word unfairly discriminatory, and I understand that the proponent of the bill is now withdrawing that part. So let me turn to the second part of the original bill. And this is the one that requires an independent audit report that would be produced before SAFE could pay a dividend. This, first of all, places an obligation on SAFE that is not being imposed on any other insurance company. And I suppose it presupposes a problem, and the problem has not been demonstrated to exist. We are subject to the same regulation as any other insurance company. I think you've heard testimony about how we're able to do things without regulation or without oversight, but in fact we are studied and reviewed just as much as any private insurance company. And the matters of whether an insurance company pays its dividends appropriately according to the statute and the rules is generally left up to the insurance division. They have the power to intervene if an insurer is violating that statute. And that dividend payment practice, if it's not reviewed specifically because of a complaint, comes up every 3 years when they do what they call the triennial financial and market conduct examination. Now, we're due for one of those later this year. The last one that we had was during 1996, and that was done in conjunction with a study that the legislature called for. In 1995, the legislature asked DCBS to write a report about Safe Corporation, and they were given a list of questions to look into. The allegation was made at that time that our dividend practices were not what some people thought they might be. And so DCBS did that report. They hired an independent expert to take a look at SAFE's dividend practices. He did that, and it was an actuarial consultant who did that review, and his conclusions were, and you can read this for yourself on the page, but he's reviewed SAFE's management of its dividend distributions, found them reasonable and appropriate, even went on to say that they were the most sophisticated that he has ever reviewed. And just so you can be sure I'm not taking that out of context, I've attached the complete four-page report that he put on that he wrote on that particular subject. Those findings were incorporated in a full 231-page report that was delivered to the legislature by the department in January 1997. So as far as that part of this bill goes, the DCBS has already done exactly what this bill calls for. They commissioned an independent audit report that verified the accuracy of the distribution and compliance with the provisions of the statute. So why should we, under the terms of this bill, have to incur the cost of an independent audit report, delay policyholders receiving dividends when there is no problem that's been shown to exist? I believe that if anyone thinks that SAFE is still paying dividends inappropriately. They have the right to ask the insurance division to investigate that. As far as I know, that's not been done. Also, we're audited every year by the Secretary of State. Dividends are obviously a material part of our financial statements, and there has never been any adverse findings about what that suggests any inaccuracy in the distribution of our dividends. So we believe that the protections already exist in statute and that this bill is unnecessary.
Thank you. May I ask you, do you feel comfortable with the way that SAFE has used dividend history in pit sheets?
Mr. Chair, what we do with that and the piece that you've received, I think, clearly has a disclaimer on the bottom that says that by law, no insurance company can promise a dividend, and that is not promising a dividend. It is merely reporting, making the customer aware of what our past dividend practices have been. So there is in no way any promise attached to what you have in front of you. By the way, I believe that, too, is a theoretical comparison. I don't think that's an actual piece that a potential customer received.
I'd also like to ask, as far as the your relationship with the state of Oregon, would you term it special in any way and different from any other firm's relationship with the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chair, if you're speaking to our status as a legal entity, we're a public corporation,
right,
and we are unique in the way in which SAFE is its relationship with the other elements of the state is unique to SAFE. There are other public corporations that operate in slightly different ways. But yes, we're unique in that way.
Your past history with the state, qualify it as kind of a special relationship at all?
Mr. Chair, before 1965, there was only one insurance company in the state to provide workers' compensation. That was SAFE. In 1965, the legislature said you can go three ways. You can buy from private companies or you can self-insure. Since then, actually, one of the other things that you've heard is that we've built up this enormous amount of money, and nobody else can compete with that. I went back and checked how much money we had set aside today to cover the losses that we had before 1965, and that actually is only about $25 million of our $2.3 billion is roughly what our assets are today. Only about $25 million of that goes back to claims before 1965. So any private insurance company could have come to Oregon in 1965, started in business, and competed with SAFE and accrued the same kind of assets that we have today to cover the losses that they would also be responsible for.
Would it be appropriate to say from a competitive standpoint that you are in business to make it hard for other insurers to make a profit?
Mr. Chair, I think that the private insurance companies would say that they're in business to try to make sure that they get more business than we do. The way that we try to operate is to make sure that we make insurance available and to as many people as possible as inexpensively as possible, and that's our goal. And if that means that actually the way the market has functioned over the last few years, our market share is generally in the 30 to 40% range. And so we're not actually driving anybody out of business. In fact, if I could give you some numbers on that today, our market share is 31%. That is lower now than it has been since the last 3 years. In fact, it went down from 37% to 31%. The private insurance company's market share has gone from around 46% to around 52%. So recent history shows that we're not driving anybody else out of business. We're competing with private companies and going head-to-head with them, but the result of that competition is lower prices for Oregon employers.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. My first question is, have you ever distributed a dividend based on discouraging competition using the resources reserves you have to undercut competition?
Mr. Chair, Representative Decker, our goal is to make coverage as inexpensive as possible. As I explained, we go through an analysis and figure out how much money we need, and what's left we pay back as a dividend. If your question is, do we think let's give a lot of money back so that we'll drive out the competition, no, that's not part of the analysis.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Is there flexibility in terms of the decision-making, in terms of distributing dividends that you have?
Mr. Chair, Representative Decker, we are able to distribute dividends at any time. We're not restricted to doing it at a particular time. We have done it over the last few years either once or twice per year. And it's always done based on that analysis of how much money do we need and how much money do we have left over.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And finally, would you address the cozy relationships, at least the question that I have in my mind and that I've read about and heard of another representative talk about in terms of special or cozy relationships that you might have with dividend receivers?
Mr. Chair and Representative Decker, I don't think we have any specially cozy relationships with anybody, and certainly not with dividend receivers. What is being alluded to here is the group arrangement that we have with Associated Oregon Industries. That was the news story that was mentioned previously in testimony. We have group arrangements with approximately 20 different trade associations, and the purpose of those programs is to promote workplace safety. The history is that by combining groups of employers together, having a sort of an entity that's responsible for promoting safety, we end up with a better loss experience, the less workers get hurt, and so on. AOI is a group that we have. We have group programs with AGC, various other trade associations. And you've just heard that NFIB would like to have the same kind of relationship with an insurance company. So this is a typical way in which insurance is priced and the way that customers are brought to an insurance company.
And so,
if I could go on one step further, too, if some parties are suggesting that our dividends favor the ones that we have relationships with, that is not true. Our dividends are based on, as I've already described, the profitability of the lines of business and then the individual loss experience of the customers.
Anyone else? Yeah.
Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Davey. I'm surprised to hear that you only have 31% of the market share. I mean, the testimony we got, I assumed that you were the major big boys in town and you were squashing anybody who dared to try to offer insurance. Maybe you can answer my question that I asked earlier. Do you know how many companies, insurance companies, are currently providing workers' compensation insurance in the state of Oregon?
Thank you, Representative Bowman. I can't give you the exact number. I think it's something like 300 plus. That's a little deceptive because a lot of companies don't actively write. But I can tell you that according to DCBS, there are 62 companies that write over $1 million worth of insurance per year. Also, in a recent DCBS report, they reported that the Hartford Group, who you've just heard about, is the fastest growing group of private insurers in the state in terms of their market share. So it doesn't seem like they're being driven out of the market.
If I could ask one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Could you tell me why you've lost the market share that you used to enjoy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, I think the market today is very competitive. We've had a change over the last 10 years, a change in the environment in Oregon. Rates have actually gone down, which is good for businesses. But private insurance companies can see that they can still come here and compete with SAFE, and they can make a profit. And that we see new companies coming to Oregon and setting up in competition with us regularly.
Last follow-up, Mr. Chair. So you don't see it as a negative for SAFE Corporation that you are, in fact, losing market share as the years progress?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, I guess we do see it as a negative if it continued. That would probably show that the way that we do business today somehow puts us at a disadvantage against the private insurance companies. But these things are cyclical, as I've said. The low point for our market share in the last 20 years has been 28%. Today we're at 31%. Mm-hmm. And there's only been 3 years out of the last 20 that we've been lower than we are today. But I don't expect to see it fall. I think it will continue to fluctuate within that 30 to 40 range.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Beck.
Sorry, I stepped out of the room. Maybe the question's been asked, Mr. Chair. Why not grant lower rates when you have – why not have a fluctuating premiums when you have dividends – And maybe someone asked that question.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I think perhaps what you're asking is why don't we have a lower upfront cost and lower and not
and have it fluctuate from year to year based on your need?
Well, first of all, insurance pricing is regulated in this state. The way that it works is that the insurance division approves what's called the pure rate, which sets a rate for various industrial classifications. Insurance companies then have to file their rates, which are expressed as a percentage above that to cover administration and other expenses. And so there are, you know, there's a bottom that you can go to. If we came along and said we wanted our upfront rates to be 20% lower, that would not be allowed by the insurance division, and they would probably say that that was anti-competitive. Also, when you pay a dividend at the end of the road, it gives you an opportunity to see how your losses have actually turned out. You don't want to have your prices too low up front because you may have some bad experience and not be able to cover those losses. If you have the price high enough to cover that, and if you return a dividend at the end of the day, then it works out fairly for all parties.
Mr. Chair, another question or two. And this is just trying to understand the nature of this dividend and how it works. I'm really not a certified smart on this stuff. Much else I find on a daily basis around here.
For the record.
Yeah, for the record. I complete ignorance. Complete ignorance. So the dividend, really, it's kind of like just a refund. I mean, it's like the kicker, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, just like you said that, not me.
I mean, I think that's a term we all use around here, and I'm just, I mean, that's...
A lot of terms are used to describe it. The technical term is it's a dividend.
Dividend.
And it's the money that's left over at the end of the day.
But if you had higher costs for some reason, if there were problems in the business that forced you to have to spend more of the money, more claims, you wouldn't necessarily have a dividend.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, that really is a good question, because I should explain that the dividends that we're paying today are a lot higher than we've ever paid in the past. And some of that is due to stock market return. Right. You know, stock market goes up, our investment income is greater, so we have more money to return. But we've done some analysis on where does the money come from that we pay out as dividends. And Brian can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think the numbers that we've shown recently is that about two-thirds of the money that we pay back is based on better loss experience than we expected in the claims that we already had. We're not expecting they're going to cost as much money as we originally thought they were. So about two-thirds of the money that we pay back is based on that, and partly that's because of the good management of those cases, partly it's because of the environment of case law and so on. The other third of that money is really due to investment returns. But if you go back to the 1980s, when the environment was very different, it was working in exactly the opposite way. We were experiencing deterioration in loss experience. We were needing to put more money into losses. And so rather than paying dividends, we were reducing our surplus in order to increase our loss reserves so that we will continue to be solvent and meet the regulatory standards that are required. And so, you know, this is cyclical like anything else. I can't imagine that we'll continue to see this level of dividends in years to come. And there are bad times when it flows the other way, too. We don't go back to the customer, by the way, and ask for more money when things go bad. We have to fund that out of our surplus funds. But when it's when things go well, we do return the money to the customer.
And keep along fine. Are you required to grant a dividend by statute, or is there anything that forces you? If you have a surplus, can you just build your reserves legally?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, you actually have the statute in front of you in the bill there. It says that we will determine the reserves deemed actuarially necessary and declare a dividend to be paid to the employers who are insured by SAFE. So I guess we are required to do that regular analysis, figure out how much money we need, and then pay a dividend of the money that we don't need.
Mr. Chairman, could the legislature say to you, we think, could we change the law and say we don't think dividends are necessarily a good idea to your customers, but since we are your granting authority and we give you non-tax status, we think we ought to get something back in addition to lower rates. And actually, we, the state, would like to sequester those dividends for certain purposes. Could we legally do that if we wanted to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, you can write laws that say that. I think you then come back to the question of what happened in 1981 or 1982 when the state decided to take $81 million from SAFE and put it into the general fund.
Right.
If you wrote the law that you're just describing, it sounds as if you would be taking SAFE's monies and putting it into the general fund. That didn't pass muster in 1982.
Legal.
The Supreme Court said it was illegal. Things are a little bit different since then, but I think that would cause the same kind of lawsuits that we've seen before.
So that's sort of the genesis of the court case, then, that's this very issue. So I see Mr. Gilliam shaking his head. Maybe he can explain that later. But
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, in that case, it was a direct taking of the assets of SAFE Corporation. It wasn't saying we'll take the money that you otherwise would have paid as dividends. But what you're describing is, in essence, the same thing. Instead of going into our assets, you're talking about diverting it directly to the general fund. So the end result is the same.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just think it's worth exploring. This is very complicated, but on one hand, they're benefiting by the tax exempt status and strong economy, like a lot of people and businesses are benefiting. And I'm just wondering whether it's an appropriate public policy for the state to get something back from SAFE. And if we can't do it, your assets, maybe dividends are more appropriate, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, you wouldn't actually be getting it back from SAFE. You might be getting the check from SAFE, but the net result would be you're getting it from the employers.
Right.
And if employers' net cost goes up as a result of that, then you're likely to see all employers' net costs go up because historically SAFE has led the market in pricing. And so if we're not taking the lead in that level, there's going to be less incentive for private companies to bring their rates or net costs down to that level.
Your prices go up and there is no free lunch.
All right, thank you. We've got 1 hour to go in this session today and three more bills to work, so if we could move right along, appreciate it. Next up will be Steve Telfer. And Steve is the last one signed up to testify on this bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Steve Telfer. I'm Oregon Legislative Counsel for the Alliance of American Insurers, which is a national trade association of property and casualty insurers of about 300 members, some of whom right here in Oregon. I'm going to, in the essence of time here, kind of depart my written testimony, which is frankly redundant with the testimony you've heard from Representative Butler and from Joe Gilliam, and just kind of get right to the heart of it. The Alliance is, of course, very supportive of having dividends. We think that's appropriate, so long as they are distributed in a very fair and non-discriminatory manner. We are not here to bash SAFE. SAFE's done a fine job. The problem that we have, frankly, is one that was touched on a little earlier, and that is that SAFE has a very, very large surplus that is the product of the historic industrial accident fund. Those earnings are tax-free, and that puts SAFE in a very, very strong position to be able to use those earnings, which are substantial, in a way that we believe makes the market less than competitive. Now, we have knowledge of some insurers who have simply said, we're not going to write coverage in Oregon unless they're for other clients that have multi-state accounts that may be headquartered in Idaho or Illinois or wherever and happen to have branch offices here in Oregon and want to have that coverage. But most of them simply can't come in and compete effectively with SAFE because of the juggernaut that they have as a result of these investment earnings. So we support House Bill 3502 and, for that matter, House Bill 3503 simply because we think adding that little bit of extra oversight, having an independent audit report to assure that the distribution of dividends is done in a fair and equitable manner is good public policy. And secondly, that having SAFE annually put out a plan telling us how they're going to distribute or how they did distribute their distributions for dividends in the prior year makes lots of sense. That way we can all see it and understand and feel assured that it's been done in a fair and equitable way. Quickly, just a little anecdotal story, a personal one. Several years ago, I was involved in a contractors association and attempted to set up a group insurance program with private carriers for workers' comp. And candidly, the program failed simply because there was no way for this other insurer, who I won't mention right now, who was writing business in Oregon, to compete, because the dividends and the discounts that were available to contractors through SAFE were just way, way too great to be able to compete with. So I know firsthand that this is an issue that's in the marketplace, and I guess the point is, how are we going to assure that in the future we can have a level playing field and a competitive market? We all know we go through cycles. We happen to be in a great cycle right now, both in Oregon and nationally. Good investment returns, low loss costs, a lot of emphasis on safety. All of those are to be applauded. But somewhere along the line in the future, the cycle is going to turn. And if the market share suddenly moves dramatically in favor of SAFE, we ultimately have the potential of losing a competitive marketplace. I'll be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you. Just one brief question. Could you tell me what the Alliance of American Insurers is?
It's a trade association, national trade association, comprised of a little over 300 insurers actually now. Most of them are mutual insurance companies rather than private stock insurance companies. There are a handful of reinsurers that are members. And in Oregon, our largest member would be Liberty, and our smallest, I think, is Church Mutual, who writes coverage for the Episcopal Diocese of Oregon and the parish priests around the street.
Thank you. Representative Harper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, are the private, this plan and the annual audit, are private companies required to do that?
No, sir.
So this would be exclusive. This would be SAFE, unique.
Mr. Chair, Representative Harper, the private insurers are, of course, required to file reports with the insurance commissioner. SAFE has a similar requirement through the Secretary of State, so there is that sort of level of reporting. But this requirement, as a result of 3502, if it were to be enacted, would impose on SAFE a unique circumstance, an independent audit to verify the distribution of their dividends.
Thank you. Representative Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Toeffler, we heard from SAFE that they currently are audited each year by the Secretary of State's office. How do you perceive this independent audit providing any additional information that is not already available on an annual basis from the Secretary of State's office?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bowman, I think that's a good question. I see this language in the bill as an independent audit focused directly at the dividend distribution policy specifically. The audit the Secretary of State conducts now on an annual basis is a much broader scoped audit that really looks at the business practices, reserves, all of the other kinds of things that normally you look at in the conduct of an audit of any business using governmental accounting principles. So really two different kinds of audit.
Thank you. Further. All right, thank you very much. I have no one else left to testify according to my sign-up sheet. I'm going to presume that's the way it is. And with no one else to testify, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3503. I just admonish the 3502, rather. I would just admonish the committee to take a look at this bill. It's interesting. It's an interesting concept. I'd like you to think about it for a couple of days. And we'll individually talk about this as to how to proceed. All right, with that said, let's move to a public hearing on House Bill 3503. And Representative Butler, are you still here? And did you want to talk on this?
If I may, just
sure, that's fine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. More than anything, I wanted to, I'm Tom Butler from House District 60. More than anything, I wanted to just hear the testimony that had been offered relative to 3502, which, again, as I started out with Representative Bowman, really we start from the other end by requiring certain things and then asking that we have a independent recollection that these things are true and have happened just exactly the way they have. We've heard issues about how much tail coverage there would have to be, and those are issues that are kind of difficult to reach out and get a hold of. I guess I would question issues relative to what items are considered to be reserves. Reserves have been all over the board here, and again, the independent audit, which would be established to make sure that we are following the guidelines that we said we would follow, are true reserves as opposed to just set asides to keep the profits from looking different than what they perhaps are. The issue basically dealing with competition has been discussed a number of times today, and is relative to 3503. I would just have you go back and reflect upon some of the testimony that you've received today, talking about pure rates. I'm not sure what pure rates are in relationship to impure rates, but the pure rates basically establish the beginning of a monopoly or a beginning of a flat rate that everybody's going to have to charge, and that's where we start. That's the devil is in the details here, because this is one of the details where everyone has to charge the same rate, but no one has the ability to accumulate billions of dollars tax-free from which to draw money down to pay against that quote-unquote pure rate. And thus, I question the pure rate versus the impure rate that comes out of it as a result of the monopolization of this issue. So I just have you consider, if you would, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, both of the issues together, and recognize that the independence of an independent entity coming forward and examining this, obviously, if there was a 1995 request, which was delivered in 1997, this is not the first time that this issue, as we come into 1999, has ever been addressed. It's if we don't take some action in this legislative assembly, I think that we are remiss, and that this issue will continue to come up, and we will continue to have people ask about these somewhat cozy relationships that are developed through time of things that I think that may not be improper, but can certainly give the appearance of impropriety. And that's what we want to avoid at all costs.
Thank you. Questions? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. We'll call up Mr. Gilliam and Mr. Cook once again, please. And just a reminder for late arrivers, we've got a full schedule here yet to do today. I'd appreciate brevity on all parts. We've got 3503 we're currently on. We will move to House Bill 2892 immediately afterward and finish up with House Bill 2574.
Gentlemen, welcome back. Mr. Chair, for the record, Joe Gilliam with the National Federation of Independent Business. I think we've made most of the points about both bills in our previous testimony. The only thing I would add after listening to Mr. Davies' testimony is the example I gave you is not theoretical. It is a document from his corporation directly faxed to a business in Mount Angel who was asked not to have their name used. That is not a made-up piece of or a theoretical piece of what might happen if they advertise that way. That is an advertisement that SAFE has sent out. It is their attempt to target the market and convince somebody that they can provide $20,000 worth of insurance for $2,000. And you can listen to their corporate gloss, and it is absolutely what he says they do in theory is not what they do in practice. And that's our problem. We don't want to restrict or prohibit SAFE from distributing dividends to their customer base. We just want them to do it in a manner that is fair, it's not discriminatory, and doesn't harm the competitive market that we're all trying to play in. It's not bad that SAFE would have an extra requirement in this process because they're the only ones who have an extra advantage of tax-free income, and that comes with the territory. And, you know, for them to scream about extra costs, look at their cozy relationship you brought up. Cost is not that big an issue. We're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, not millions of dollars, to make sure that they're not damaging the fair market. And I would make myself available to Representative Beck at any time to talk about the complexities of your interest in the Industrial Accident Fund. I served as the co-chair for the class who sued the state to recover the funds, and Mr. Davies' testimony isn't quite accurate on your interest in the fund and how that would have to. It's very complex, but what the court has said, your interest is in the fund.
Thank you. Representative Bowman.
Mr. Gilliam, I appreciate the testimony that you're giving, but I'm a show-me kind of person. Unless you can show me some advertisement that SAFE is putting out that clearly shows that they are using this strategy to attract business, then I put no faith in you telling me to trust you that you got a document from some unnamed business that they use this. So unless you have something that you are willing to provide for the record, I think we're going down a very slippery slope when we have people come in and tell us what they saw or heard from unnamed people and sources. And if that person doesn't want to be named, then obviously it must not be that big of an issue for that company.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bowman, I can understand your opinion. I've given you the example. It's before you. And to ask the company to use its name in a very dicey situation, I don't think it's fair to that company. And I'm sorry that I can't go further than that for you. I apologize.
I'd like to ask you, in a 300 business market, is a 31 share by the market leader to you a large share, a big boy?
Mr. Chair, and my feeling, yes, it is. When you watch one carrier, your second carrier, at in the 20% range, and then you drop down to 5% to the third largest carrier, it's not a very even-based market. It's just one giant cliff that drops. And I'd ask Mr. Cook to address that. If he's
and actually, there are...
Identify yourself.
I'm sorry. So. For the record, I'm Jeff Cook. There are around 300 companies that are authorized to provide workers' comp, but in 1997, actually only 185 private insurers actually received premiums. So I think if you look at that from that point of view, Mr. Chairman, it actually... is more concentrated than that would appear. Also, I apologize before I misunderstood your question. I thought you were asking about the number of companies that were required to provide workers' compensation coverage for their employees. Sorry, Representative.
Do you have any further questions? Any further statements, briefly? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right. We'll call Chris Davey from SAFE back. Gentlemen, welcome back, and I would, just to be even-handed, Chris, I'd like to ask you, say we had a 300-player market, would you consider a 31 share by number one to be one of the big boys?
Mr. Chair, obviously we're the biggest boy. There are 31% is the largest single carrier, but it is certainly not a monopoly position. As I pointed out, now our market share has gone down. Our next biggest competitor has around 17% market share. And we compete head-to-head with Liberty Northwest every day for business. They're a broad, they cover a broad spectrum of businesses just as we do.
All right. Thank you. I'll go ahead and have you identify yourself once again, and then if you speak to the bill, feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris Davey from SAFE Corporation. I really have very little to say about... and I'm getting confused with these numbers here again, House Bill 3503, we don't have a problem with providing the legislature and the governor with a copy of our dividend policy. That's something that's readily available. We have not resisted giving that out. I'm not aware that we've been asked regularly for that. If it takes a bill to do that, then so be it. But we're perfectly comfortable giving out that information. If I could also just take a moment to, I know you don't want to get into an extended tit-for-tat with between SAFE and NFIB, But just a couple of points, if I might, that in talking about the relationship that Safe has with any other trade association, I believe that back in the early 90s when we made our arrangement with AOI, we did in fact talk with NFIB first. NFIB was not interested in entering into a relationship with us like that. And so NFIB has had the option of doing that. They've in the past chosen not to do so. Other insurance companies have the same arrangements with trade associations. Liberty Northwest has similar plans with other groups. And if I could just also speak once again to this idea of an independent audit report, it's as if this is something that hasn't gone on before and that we really need to get this report out there so we can find out what's going on. And once again, that's exactly what DCBS did in 1996. They got an expert, an independent expert, and the expert said that Safe's dividends were the most sophisticated he'd ever seen. And of course, he looked at the idea that we might be favoring particular customers because those were the allegations that were made back then, too. And so we don't see the need to go down that road again.
Just briefly, I might ask about the... And I don't want to overstate this. In fact, I want to be careful not to. There is some suspicion regarding SAFE and some of its policies that is somewhat media fanned, and we all understand how things like that can happen, right or not. Would the imposition of 3502 and 3503 cause undue hardship on SAFE to perhaps dispel that problem and move it away from you?
Mr. Chair, I don't think it would make any difference. A lot of the suspicion, I think was the word you used about SAFE Corporation, is fanned by our competitors in the marketplace. You generally don't see the insurance buying public coming in here saying that they have a problem with the way that SAFE operates. It has become traditional that every legislative session there is some bill that tries to change SAFE in some way which would advantage the private insurance companies. So I think that simply the passage of these two bills wouldn't make that go away.
Thank you. Representative Atkinson.
Thank you. Stady, would you, when there's a small company who's trying to decide between SAFE and Liberty or a various host of other competitors, I'd be curious to see the some of the marketing material that the SAFE creates. Could you provide some?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Atkinson, I can do that. Perhaps I'll give Brian an opportunity to say a few words because marketing materials come somewhat into his realm.
You do have a presentation folder, as it were?
Sure. Okay. My name is Brian Steffel. I'm Senior Vice President of SAFE Corporation. Mr. Chair, Representative Atkinson, we do have marketing materials specifically designed for our various groups, and we'd be happy to share any materials from our AOI group or any other group with you.
Well, I'm not necessarily looking for the groups. I'm looking for the individual company who is teetering in their decision.
Sure.
I mean, that's right at the heart of marketing and advertising, decision making.
Right.
That's what I'm interested in.
We can make that available to you.
Thank you very much.
You'd make that representative sampling available to each member here. I'd appreciate that.
We can do that.
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Representative Beck.
Just have a question for Mr. Gilliam, if you can come up pretty briefly. You guys can stay. You're just all friends here.
I guess.
Joe, maybe I asked this when you were in my office, I don't know, 2 months ago, whatever. If this is just a deal that's too good to be true, SAFE is offering such a great deal, why doesn't NFIB sign up with SAFE?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, Chris is correct. They did offer right after the workers' comp reforms special session in 1990. I did receive a call from then President Stan Long. I had a meeting with Stan Long, Kathy Keene, who was then the public affairs director, I believe was her title, and a gentleman named, last name was Zakarian, I believe his first name was David. And Mr. Davies was not present at the meeting, it was only us four. I was offered a program, and I want to be very careful what I say here, that did not appear to be appropriate for me personally in the position I was in. And I excused myself from the meeting, and several days later, Ms. Keene contacted my office, wanted to know if I wanted to do their proposal. And I said I would like to review it, and I would pass it on to my national if you present it in writing. They would not present it in writing, and that was in discussion with SAFE.
That was what year?
That was just after the 1990 special session. I'm trying to remember what month we were in special session. May. And so I was just after, not long after that, like within the 2 months after that session.
On an assumption that the dividends have gone up dramatically, it sounds like, in the last few years, and thus sweetening the pie even more for people to join SAFE, why not sit down? I mean, you're obviously getting a better deal from wherever you're getting workers' comp now. I assume your business, you'd get go where you get the best deal. Why not? If you think SAFE is better, why not sign up with them now, 10 years later?
Mr. Chair, Representative Back, they have a program with a competitor, a membership competitor. With ours, I don't think in a practical sense that would work. Philosophically, for NFIB and its membership are very strong in their belief of a free market solution, and they also believe that the state of Oregon should not be in business and conducting businesses against the private market. That's a philosophical position.
Leave it alone, Chris.
Okay, I'll drop it.
All right, Alan, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we'll conclude our testimony on this bill with Steve Helper, please.
Good answer. Good answer.
And welcome back.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Steve Telfer with the Alliance of American Insurers. I really don't need to testify again. I think you have it in writing. It would be redundant with what I've said before. We see this as coupled with the other bill. It makes great sense, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, sir. Any questions?
Let me ask the same question, Steve. Would this restriction in advertising apply to the private sector?
No.
And there is no restriction on the private sector against?
No. And Mr. Chair, Representative Harper, I would, I guess, have the same response that Joe did. SAFE enjoys a rather unique status, and so we don't see any need to be concerned that this is a separate.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3503, and we're going to stand the committee down for about 2 minutes so we can get our paperwork together here on House Bill 2892. We'll do that.